Good news is, next time I stop, you get to have lunch. Bad news is there wasn't a budget to feed you lunch, so you're on your own. As we continue, different translations and Proverbs are different, but the danger would be, for many of us, is a temptation to compromise our integrity and our desire to gain wealth. And there are so many warnings about different ways we can be guilty of that. We filled out our taxes, what, a month and a half ago, right? And there could be a temptation there. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 10 says, differing weights and differing measures, both of them are abominable to the Lord. And this is also kind of funny, where you go back 3,000 years ago when this was written, and actually Bruce Waltke, the amazing Old Testament scholar, talked about this, is that when archaeologists dig up the various weights that, you know, that were used 3,000 years ago in the ancient Near East, they can't even figure out what different things weighed, because the merchants would carry two sets, one for buying and one for selling. And so that's been going on all along. I guess that's why on gas pumps, they have people check them to make sure it's really delivering the number of gallons it says. And human nature, because of greed, is to debase currencies and we're tempted because of the love of money to cheat. It's the verses already read, the haste to get rich. I love Proverbs 13:11. Wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it. Another translation is the one who gathers little by little. But either way, how do you get money? Well, you work hard and you work smart. People try to go around that because hard work is difficult. And acquire, by the way, it's hard to acquire skill too, isn't it? It's hard to go to school or to be an apprentice or get the degree or whatever, get the certification and the long hours that it takes. And so people want to get lots of money without lots of effort. The way it's translated in the NAS is who gathers by labor. How do you get money? You gather money by laboring. You work hard at what your trade is or your skill is. Another translation says who gathers little by little. And I think it all fits together, where you don't suddenly get rich. You build wealth over a lifetime by working hard, saving, increasing your skills, increasing your value to other people. Which gets to the point that not everybody gets to do a job they love in a fallen world. There are actually, one of the main areas is ministry, where people say, well, I think God has called me to be a pastor, but you can't find 50 other people who think that. And so sometimes that guy expects his wife to provide for him while he's working as a volunteer, preaching or teaching, but no one, he can't get a job in that field. There used to be people, too many people wanted to be pilots. Right now, by the way, if you're a pilot, you can get a job anywhere. But it's nice if you can have a job you love, but your character is you do what it takes to provide for the needs of your family. Now, a big issue in counseling would be, from where you are now, how could you acquire more skill that would make you more valuable in the workplace? And some of that is just a self-evaluation, right? Okay, income is too low. Don't want to work at Chick-fil-A the rest of my life. Even a team leader only makes $17 an hour or whatever. I mean, maybe you could become a operator that, you make hundreds of thousands of dollars. But, if you're really bad at math, then probably accounting or finance is not your thing. Maybe you work well with your hands, so where's something that I could do with my hands? What is paying right now $30 an hour? What things could I get from here to there? If you have a family, probably getting a bachelor's degree and going to medical school is an unlikely path if you're 30 years old and you haven't gotten very far along there. And you may say, but maybe there's a computer certification course you can take that people who graduate from that are making $25 an hour with prospects of going up. And so you attack those problems. How can I, according to God's formula, how can I improve my situation? There are many warnings that wealth obtained by fraud, God ultimately takes away from those who obtain wealth improperly, which gets me to a couple of sensitive issues. I'm going to going to talk about gambling. In North Carolina, you know, they call the lottery the education lottery, which to me is an oxymoron and a misnomer, okay? And who buys lottery tickets? It's not Warren Buffett and Elon Musk, right? It's people who already are in financial need, who are hoping for lightning to strike and to make them wealthy, and so they're taking money that's needed for groceries and insurance and rent and wasting the money on lottery tickets. And the whole point of the lottery is, or other gambling, is you're saying, I'm going to try to make a lot of money with no skill and no effort. And I would say there's only two things that can happen when you gamble, and they're both bad. Probably you're going to lose. If you've been to a casino, they're not losing very often, right? You see how nice it is, what they've been able to spend money on. The game's going to work in their favor. It could even be worse if you win. For various reasons. One is you see people who then get hooked. Well, I won at this thing before, and now I'm going to win more. But I'll tell a personal story that one time I was connecting through an airport in Nevada, and the place was loaded with slot machines. And there was this machine that was probably tied to other machines all over the state, and it was like $10 million jackpot. And I'm thinking, why not put a couple quarters in? What could go wrong? I'm thinking, what if I won? You know, billboards, pastor wins, $10 million jackpot. My face on the bill. I would not come out ahead. But in gambling, you're depriving other people of money. If you win, you're not giving them something of value. You didn't mow their grass. You didn't give them a Tesla. You just sat at the poker table, and either by luck or some kind of skill, you got their money away from them without giving them anything. That's not how God has ordained we make money. Not to mention the crime, the poverty, the other bad things that go along with all forms of gambling. And it's shameful, I'm a political statement, that our government promotes it. And it's a tax upon the poor and the foolish. Now, are you going to be under church discipline if you're in the Reno, Nevada airport and you put a couple quarters in a slot machine? Probably not. There are people who can say, okay, I'm going to go on I'm going to spend $50 and I can afford that for entertainment. You spend more than that on dinner or whatever. I don't know what exactly every church is going to handle those situations, generally speaking. But people do unwise things with their money, but just, A, you may like it. B, you're supporting something I think is really evil and destructive. It's gambling is an effort to undermine how the Bible says we're supposed to make money. There are other get-rich-quick schemes that are a bit more controversial. Actually, a week ago, I was in Medellin, Colombia, teaching these same principles. And one thing that I really appreciate is what was written 3,000 years ago is just as true today, and it's true in North America, South America, Asia, you name it. It's true because it's biblical. And I had many people coming up to me about various schemes they were involved in trying to make money. One of the most common ones lately has been trading cryptocurrency. I've had over the years many people who had various schemes for day trading. And you know, they read a book or they read an article on the internet, and they kind of work the same way, where in my opinion, this, and maybe there's somebody here with a great financial background that would want to debate me at some point, maybe offline, but in my mind, there's a difference between, like, my wife has bought Cracker Barrel stock. She is participating in providing capital for a business that provides meals and goods to people, and if she thinks it's well run, she's participating in their success. She's receiving dividends. It's a long-term investment. There's a difference between that and buying, you know, puts or calls or options, guessing that Cracker Barrel is going to go down $2 tomorrow and up $3 the next day, and I'm going to guess which way it's going to go short-term, which is day trading. Well, you're really, in my mind, you're sitting at a poker table with other people saying, I'm going to outguess them about the short-term movements in the market. It has nothing to do about my opinion of the value of this company in providing goods and services to people, which is a valid thing to do. I'm just trying to outsmart other people. And part of it is, Proverbs 26:12, do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There's greater hope for a fool than for him. And I was actually a week ago talking to a young man. He wanted to be in full-time ministry. He didn't have enough money. And he had somebody offered him a course in trading cryptocurrencies. And again, cryptocurrencies themselves are not hard assets backed by a metal or a government. It's whatever anybody else is willing to pay for it. And it's not an idea of saying, I think this is a good thing in the long term as a store of value of my money. It's really, I'm going to try to guess whether it goes up or down, and if I guess right, I make lots of money. And somebody's taught me a system by which I can do that, okay? One thing would be, here you are, you've got a little bit of a theology education, you have very little business background. You're sitting at the table with $10,000 with people who are billionaires all on the table with you. You really think you can outsmart them because they're doing the same thing? That is hubris, in my opinion, to think that you can, through day trading or jumping in and out of these things, win. And in the long run, you're not going to win. So again, what's the answer? The answer is not, and I actually had a student who had been doing some day trading and he'd been a bit successful. And, you know, happy for you that you have some more money, but markets go up, markets go down. In the long term, you're not providing value to other people. You're not making, it's circumventing the way the Lord has designed that wealth is created. In virtually every case, if you give it enough time, it crashes and burns. And so, how do we make wealth? And also, little by little, we work hard, we save, we improve our skills. When you make money providing great benefit to others for which they're willing to pay, that is the way the Lord has designed. Other ways, there's a moral problem with it, that you're not providing something of value, and probably you're going to wind up in poverty yourself. There's a whole universe of people out there who want to take advantage of the greed of people who want to circumvent God's way of making wealth, if that makes sense. Okay, so if I haven't already trod on enough toes, what about multi-level marketing or network marketing? And I'm purposefully ignorant about what's going on in your church or churches right now in that area. I cannot say from the Bible that you're not allowed to do network marketing. And back when I was newly married, Amway was the big thing. And now there always has been something. And churches are often prime targets because you have a community of people who love and trust each other. And so you're looking for a relationship to get people who are your friends to buy your product or to sell so that you can share in what they're selling. I can't say from the Bible you're not allowed to do this, but I can say there's a lot of risk involved, several risks. One is relational risk. When Carol and I were first married, we were excited to be no longer the college kids, but now we're the young married couple in the church, and people started inviting us over. I thought, oh, that's really nice. They're inviting me over. And yet, a couple times they invited us over to give us an Amway pitch. And the whole evening was about getting to the climax where would you be interested in having a business of your own, da 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 da. And in one case, it was like as soon as it was fairly early in the meal, I saw it coming. I said, look, if this is where it's going, I would love to have a meal with you, but I don't want to talk about Amway. Well, that was the end of that relationship. Like, you know, it was like I was under church discipline. Not exactly, but I'm just no longer interested in me if I was interested in being part of their network. In the other case, they were more gracious about it. But are you looking at other people in the church as people that you can use your spiritual gifts to bless them? Are you looking at those outside the church as unbelievers you evangelize? Or are you looking at everybody as a prospect for building your network so you can make more money off of them? That is a struggle with this kind of relationship, in my opinion. Another question would be, and I can't answer it in every case, but are you really giving people something of great value for all the money they're spending? And I'll take detergent, which was the thing I was familiar with 40-something years ago with Amway, where, you know, here is a tub of detergent. Well, if it's going to be delivered to me personally by my friend and three people down the line are all making a cut, it's not a very efficient way of delivering detergent compared to me going to Costco and buying it there. It's going to be a much lower markup at Costco. Now, the way they overcome that, and they say, our detergent is better than every other detergent. You only can get it from us. And that can be with all of these other products as well. Now, I can't evaluate every claim, whether it's true or false, but I can tell you many of these claims have been evaluated by others. I'm not talking about the detergent in particular. And they're not valid. You're paying, are you really giving people something valuable for all the money they're spending? If you get people to work under you, I mean, there are often promises made of all the money they can make, and yet statistics will show, I've got a whole chapter of this on my book, and Randy Alcorn has written about it as well, that, you know, a very small percentage of the people who jump into these things come out financially ahead. And so I can't say you're not allowed to do it. I can say that it can become divisive and cliquish within the church, but also, you know, looking at people to make money. And I think in some cases, you may not really being deliver something of great value to other people, even in terms of them joining your network or buying the stuff from you. So you need to beware. It's an extraordinarily inefficient way of selling things when you think of Amazon or Costco. And again, then there has to be these spectacular claims that there's only here can you get this, which makes it so much more valuable. Some of those claims, and I'm not being specific about which ones it may be, some of those claims cannot be substantiated. And so there's an issue of truth. There's the temptation to greed. Again, I can't say you're not allowed to do it, but if you're going to do it, be careful. I've seen some people do it far better than others, and some not so well. Like the people who had us over to dinner, and when I said, I'm not interested, we still had a pleasant evening and we still had a relationship afterwards. I can't say they're not allowed to do that, but it can be dangerous. In general, doing stuff with other people from church can be dangerous. Okay, financially. Next broad category is spending money. And this is really when you look at like people who are struggling financially, there are two things you can do with people who are struggling financially. You can increase income by working hard and working smart, and you can control expenditures, broadly speaking, by making a budget. And one of the most common things you'll hear from people who are struggling financially is that I'm no good at money, therefore I can't do a budget, or all the money we get comes in, goes out, there's no point in making a budget, it's gone as quickly as we see it. Part of the myth that causes overspending is, we've already talked about, that having more stuff or vacations or eating out will make me happy. And so it's beckoning us, saying, this thing will improve my life so much, I've got to have it, I've got to have it now. Which gets back to seeing not just 10% of what we have or whatever percentage you've decided to give away, but everything we have is a stewardship from God. I've already said, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy some of it and enjoy more than others if you've been exceptionally productive, but everything is a stewardship from God and we want to spend it in a way that honors Him. And of course, it begins in Proverbs 3, verses 9 and 10, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so that your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. And so step one would be giving to the Lord's work is the beginning, not the end of your budget. And there are many Christians where their idea is, I will give the Lord what's left over after I've done everything else. The Bible says that the blessing of God is upon those who make giving to Him the first thing. And the picture of a harvest, okay, day one of harvest, you give to the Lord of the first fruits of your harvest, which takes faith that the locusts aren't going to come or the hail or whatever else to wipe out the rest of your crop. You're trusting God will provide sufficiently for what the rest as you do that. And so giving is an act of faith. And for those of us who've been believers for a while, I trust that most of you would have a track record of saying that I've never given to the Lord's work and regretted it, that I've never given to those in need. And I can't say I've never regretted it, but it was the right thing. God has always taken care of me. Actually, I'll make another statement. Especially, a lot of what the Bible says about giving actually has to do with helping needy people and not just providing for the needs of the church. It's biblical. Don't muzzle your ox, 1 Timothy 5. It's biblical to pay for those who care for us, shepherd us in the church, support missions, you know, the church debt facility. All those things are good. But much of the giving, most of the giving talk in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, is about helping those in need. But I'll make kind of a challenging statement. If you've never given to someone where later you realize you shouldn't have, you're probably too stingy. Does that make sense? If you've never been taken advantage of, you're probably too careful and too stingy. You know, there are warnings in the Bible, like 2 Thessalonians 3 says, if someone will not work, neither shall he eat. And the church is told not to give resources to sluggards. And so that doesn't mean if you have a lazy brother who won't work that you should just keep paying his way. But if you're ultra careful, saying, I will never give unless I'm completely sure everything is good. And this is a situation deacons and elders face in the church. Most people who come to the church for help have done foolish things to get themselves into that situation. And there's mercy. You know, is there repentance? Is there a willingness to learn? Is there a willingness to work? And so, by the way, if you and I crashed and burned financially and we needed help, we couldn't say, oh yeah, I was completely innocent, and you know, we could all go back. Actually, a little mini book on financial crisis was kind of written for those kinds of situations. But back to the point, that so giving should be a priority in our budget. My belief is that the 10%, when you even go back to Genesis before the law was given, and that was seemed like a guideline, I think it's a very helpful guideline. And yet, I don't think we're absolutely under that. Actually, I think for some of us, that would be way too little given how greatly God has blessed us. Actually, I met a man who was a wealthy man who said he would love in his lifetime to give away $1 billion. I don't think he's going to make it, but it's a nice intention. And so I think part of it is, and for some people, by the way, this is related to debt. Debt hinders your lifestyle and hinders your ability to give. It keeps you from doing all the good things you could do with money because you're paying down the debt. But I think to make a goal, for some people, they're in debt, they're struggling to get by, and sometimes for them to start with something, even if it's a few percent, a couple percent, to make that a priority in their budget, to make sacrifices, and then to make it a goal to grow in your giving for a lifetime. And then maybe someday when you get older and as God has blessed you, you can give 20% or 25% away or even larger chunks. And so when Paul talks about giving in 2 Corinthians, he even says, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. It's a privilege. There are many hucksters trying to get your money, which is why we need to give very wisely. I think it's great to give through the church and entrust to the deacons and the elders, you know, missions and benevolence, opportunities there. It's a blessing and a privilege to be able to do that. We also are in churches that believe in God's sovereignty, and so it's not like God's work is going to grind to a halt if you don't give. He doesn't need your money. He owns everything. It's more of a matter that we have the privilege of participating in God's work. And so in the early church, when they gave to help the widows, is that, you know, God's going to feed the widows, but they had the privilege. That's what the Corinthians, Paul writes to the Corinthians, said, the people in Macedonia, like including Philippi, they were begging for the privilege of being included in meeting the needs of the saints in Judea. And so giving is a privilege of doing God's work and participating in God's work. And he doesn't need you, but what a privilege it is to be a part of it. And for some of us, that can be a big part of our calling in life. That can be a gift from God. I knew a man one time who was a very successful businessman. He was almost feeling guilty because he wasn't in ministry. He was talking about like quitting business and going into ministry. And I mean, he's free to make that decision. But I said, one thing you might consider is that if you give away, at the rate you're making money, if you give away 20% of it, you'd be able to pay for 3 people full-time ministry. And that might be, I'm not a prophet, but that might be the way God calls you to do ministry, is you can support 3 missionaries or help to get a church planted somewhere. So giving is a priority to honor the Lord. It's a form of worship. It's an expression of trusting God that, you know, and if you've been giving well over a lifetime, I know you left hand shouldn't talk too much to the right hand about what you've been doing. You can look back, all this, you know, it can be a large sum of money you've given away in 30, 40, 50 years, and yet God has taken care of you, and that's a privilege. But then, I've got a verse, like, can I make you, from the Bible, can I force you to make a budget? Almost. I don't want to be legalistic, but Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes to poverty. And in my mind, you know, a budget is a plan for how to spend your money. And actually, I use Proverbs 21:5 for time and for money. The general principle with time would be that God has given me the time to do things he wants me to do, but if I don't plan my time well, things will be undone. And so I have this many hours in a week, and I need to plan when to be with my wife. I need to plan when to interact with my mother, my widowed mother, different things. I need to plan when I'm getting my work done. And if I don't plan, I'll waste too much time staring at screens and I won't get the stuff done. Similarly with money, for most of us, the premise would be God has given you, if you're working hard and working smart as best you can, the means you need to live as he wants you to live. But if you're not careful with it, you're going to come to poverty and going to run out anyway. And so, you know, the budget would be just making a plan. So, okay, I'm bringing in $5,000 a month. Well, I need to plan spending that is less than $5,000 a month. That's pretty simple, isn't it? In the larger money book, I have links to spreadsheets online that you could use to kind of fill in different categories of housing and, you know, car and different other things. And so you work out how, and this is something we've done in counseling with people. We'll sit down like with a template and just say some are fixed expenses, mortgage or rent, and you know, some people making car payments and so forth. There's a lot of discretionary money that's being spent. How many coffees are you having a month? How many movies? How much eating out? Uber Eats, other things. And I can't say from the Bible what kind of cell phone or data plan you should have or cable in your house or all those things. I can tell you, you need to spend less money than you're making. And how you work that out is a matter of your liberty, but let's make a plan to live within those means. And again, the book goes through some details about how to make a budget. It'd be some way similar to Dave Ramsey. Part of it, too, is you need to plan for periodic expenses, not just monthly expenses. Sometimes you'll have people, and they're going along, and say, oh man, things are going great, and you know, we were making our budget every month, and then our car insurance came due. Well, the plans of the diligent lead to advantage. You know there are going to be periodic expenses like, you know, $1,000 car insurance payment every 6 months, or we were doing fine, and then my air conditioner broke, or my car needed a new set of tires, or the water pump broke. Life is going to have these expenses. If you own a house, and there are even percentages that, you know, that certain percentage of the value of your house every year is going to be repairs. Basically, I've owned one house for over 30 years. I've just rebuilt the thing bit by bit. Everything is worn out and been replaced. That's part of owning a house. Same thing with a car, is that you're going to have a certain amount of repairs every year. A great thing to put in your budget is saving for the next car so you can pay cash for it rather than a car payment. So there are lots of categories other than just food and clothing and things like this. Gifts. You can be going along, hey, we've budgeted $50 a month for gifts, and here it is December, and we've got $200 left. You're probably in trouble, right? Because all of a sudden it's Christmas, and oh, well, we don't worry about budgeting at Christmas, and poof, all it goes. And so, you know, and probably in any church, there are going to be some people who are good at this, who can sit down with those who are not so great at it and to help them. And just to say, hey, let me help you. If you're willing to entrust to me your financial situation, I'll sit with you and we'll try to make a plan for how you spend your money. Sometimes we'll go, now that people are doing most things electronically, by the way, in selling my books, I'm not set up to do that, but you know, you can go through the bank statement with all the debit card hits, and you can go through the credit card statements if they're using credit cards. And sometimes you have to go back and reconstruct, because sometimes you let people say, well, you know, I can only figure out where $4,000 went. I made $5,000, yet my credit card bill went up $500. What happened? Where's that missing money? I'll have every time you spend money, get a receipt. If they didn't give you a physical receipt, write it down, and let's reconstruct where has the money been going. And sometimes you can say, well, you've got this cable plan that has every possible streaming service ever known to man on there. You're hardly using them, or you just can't afford them. And so where can we cut back? You can afford a coffee, you know, you can afford a coffee once a week, not seven times a week or six times a week or 12 times a week. You know, if you want to drink coffee every day, twice a day, and pay, if you've got, the Lord is giving the money, that's your freedom. But how do we make this thing balance? And that can take some effort. And then you need to have a way to keep track. Making a budget does no good if you don't keep the budget. Some people, there's an app, I think it's called You Need a Budget. Does anybody use that app? It's popular among, okay, Henson's do. They can try to use it. Where it sucks in your expenditures out of your debit card and your credit cards, and then it categorizes them in the different areas to, and so you can keep track. And so, okay, we've budgeted $150 this month for every kind of entertainment and eating out. Okay, well, what is today? June the 4th, we had we've already spent $125. That means we've got $25 left for the rest of the month for discretionary entertainment expenses. We have to live within the budget. So you have to make a budget, then you have to keep track of the budget. There are these vampires that kind of suck the life out of your money. All these businesses want you to go on auto pay, right? And they want you to go on auto pay, and they want you to go paperless. Ironically, the people who want you to go paperless, they're sending you mail all the time to try to get you to do more business with them. It's not that they're trying to save the planet. It's they don't want you to notice how much money you're spending with them. They want you to have to go in and figure it out where it's going. And so I'm not saying it's immoral. I'm just saying, you know, you sign up for the gym membership and Netflix and Prime and whatever, and you add all those things together, and they don't want you to know it's coming out. I actually know somebody who moved from state to state, and he went to the AAA office in the new state, and he brought his old card and he signed up. And for 3 or 4 years, his old state was still billing him for AAA while he had AAA in the new state. It's on auto pay. He gets nothing in the mail, and he didn't notice and got nothing for all the money. So you have to stay on top of it. There's another proverb that talks about, you know, the wise in the agrarian economy, you know the condition of your flocks. So you have to stay on top of your finances. It's worth making the plan. And then also dealing with the heart issues of contentment. I've mentioned, Paul says in 1 Timothy 6, if we have food and clothing, with these we should be content. Paul writes from prison that he's learned to be content with much or with little. Proverbs 21:17, he who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. You read Ecclesiastes, right? Especially in chapter 2, and Solomon is describing how he held nothing back. He was like as rich as any man on earth, and yet it did not bring him great satisfaction, because that's not where satisfaction comes from. And so, you know, learning to be content, learning to live with the old one. You know, you'll hear people say things like, oh man, this car is just costing me too much money, that I've had one repair after the other. Well, how many total repairs have you had? Well, this year I had to do 3 things that cost $700. I need a new car. I think, well, if your car maintenance is $300 a month, that's $3,600. And that car may still need some maintenance. And so thinking through these things, being content to live within your means, to be content with less. And of course, the worst thing about overspending is it just leads to more and more debt. And again, this gets back to Caroline and I. Our relationship has to be in harmony for the budget to work. That sometimes is allowances. I've talked to people where sometimes you have the spender married to the saver, and there can be extremes in both directions. And so relationally, you have to work these things through, not to be the high-handed moralist who says, you know, what a worthless person you are because you like nice things and I'm a responsible person because I save. An area of conflict, the main area of conflict we've had with finances has been that Caroline is extremely generous. Like, she won't spend money on herself. Actually, I have to go clothes shopping with Caroline to stand next to her and say, yes, go ahead and buy this. Some of you men have no idea what I'm talking about, but that's my experience, is that she will not spend money on herself unless I almost insist that she do so. But when it comes to gift giving, it's like, how much can we spend? And I'll set this upper limit. So how about some more? And, you know, she wants, you know, again, I'm the stingy one probably, where it's like Christmas. Say, well, how much can we spend on these people? Said, these people have never given us a gift at Christmas. But that doesn't matter to her. She loves being generous. And part of my loving my wife is trying to work within our budget to allow her to be more generous than I would be while still making the bottom line number come out evenly. Again, there are various tools. We, for a long time, would just use like a spreadsheet, like Google Sheets or now Excel or something like that. We would even use accounting paper. We would just write down expenses. We had like 10 columns, and we would write down, you know, housing, Home Depot stuff, or eating out, or groceries and things of that nature. I've got a theory on diets. All diets work if you follow them. I would say that all budgets work if you follow them. A budget requires a plan for how you spend money and keeping track of that, and different people work it out different ways. There are tools that will help you. And then wrestling with your heart issues in terms of what you think it will take to make you really happy, to make you content. I guess I can take a few more minutes to begin the debt topic. The verse that we use is Proverbs chapter 22, verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. And I cannot say from the Bible that it's wrong to owe money, wrong to be in debt, wrong to lend money to other people. I can tell you that debt is very, 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 very dangerous. And there is a mentality that debt, again, for governments, debt is a way you can give people lots of stuff without having to take much away from them in terms of taxes. So that's attractive. For businesses, debt can be attractive, where you own a restaurant and you're getting by. You have very little debt, but you're thinking, I could have another restaurant. But you don't have the capital to buy or lease the property and set up the next place, so I'm going to borrow money from the bank. Why not borrow for three more restaurants? Well, the prospect of, if it's successful, is if you, you know, borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars, the bank will lend you that money, or relatives, or whatever. If it prospers, you're going to make a whole lot more money. It's called leveraging. The downside is, if COVID hits and restaurants are shut down for a long period of time, you can't service your debt and you may lose everything. And the guy that had one restaurant may survive, and the guy the one restaurant guy with no debt survives, and the restaurant guy with three restaurants, everything goes under for him. Corporations as well. You know, corporations can issue more stock, they can share ownership, or they can borrow lots of money, but then there's more risk. You go through a recession, which may or may not be coming. I'm not a prophet. Recession makes families, it makes businesses, and it damages governments. And so debt is always dangerous. Say, well, what about buying a house? Debt, you know, most of us need to borrow some money to buy a house, but houses don't always go up in value. Actually, we've had an extraordinary run-up in value. What do things often do after they've gone like that? They often do this. We bought a house in San Diego. We moved there to go to seminary in 1987. We bought a house for $130,000. And after 3 years of the economy doing pretty well, it was worth $200,000. Then there was a crash for various reasons, and suddenly our house was worth $140,000 again. And it went up and down. Right before the crash in 2008, they guessed it was worth over $600,000. But I even told Caroline, I said, I think we could sell our house now and buy it back for just over half. I was a prophet on that occasion. In the 2008 crash, it went down to $350,000 or less. And up and down it goes. Assets go up and down. And so what happens in practical terms? Well, we knew people who misused debt. So here, now you could think, what could I do? Okay, my house is now worth, they say it's worth $600,000. I owe $100,000 on it. The bank will lend me $400,000 because I've got all that equity. I've also been running up my credit cards for 15 years. I can pay off $50,000 in credit card debt. I can buy a boat. I can take some cruise vacations. I can, you know, enhance my lifestyle and barely make the payment on this now $550,000 debt on my $600,000. Oh, but now the house has gone down to $350,000. I owe $500,000 on an asset worth $350,000, and there's a recession, and now I've either lost my job or I'm not making as much money. Whose fault is that? And you know, debt is dangerous. The person who paid down his house for 30 years, so now he owns it free and clear, loses his job, experiences a recession, he's okay. Debt is always dangerous. So probably we can take the break and I'll finish after lunch talking about debt, then talking positively about investing. Josh had asked me to mention the books. The books I'm selling for approximately my cost. Actually, some of them are a little... All right, I'm not trying to make money on books. They're about what I cost for them. So if you want, I don't take credit cards. It's not because I have any moral principle against it. I'm not set up for that. But if you want it, fine. If you don't, that's fine too. Caroline's book is the best book out there if you haven't gotten that one for the ladies. What time do you want people to come back?